The Escape Pod. Let's go on a trip through time to see what tomorrow looked like yesterday.
Preparing escape pod for war.
Today was yesterday's tomorrow. Where we are now used to be the unimaginable future. And today's outdated entertainment used to be yesterday's state of the art.
Power.
Sifting through science fact and science fiction, from outdated technology to the birth of the future. Let's get away from it all for a few minutes by going back the way we came in the logbook.com's Escape Pod. I'm Earl Green, and I'll be your guide through the fantastic, the futuristic, and the unmistakably geeky. This is what tomorrow looked like yesterday. In 1973, the robot takeover began. Professor Ichiro Kato and his team at Waseda University in Tokyo brought the first full-sized humanoid robot online, Wabot 1. It could see, understand basic speech, pick up objects, and even walk very slowly. Wabot 1 had been in development since 1967, and its inventors claimed it had the same mental capacity as an 18-month-old human child. In 1977, NASA launched another robot, Voyager 1, toward its grand tour of the outer solar system, where it undertook a groundbreaking exploration of Jupiter and Saturn and their major moons.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4... 3, 2, 1.
MDS,
we have ignition, we have a liftoff.
Roll program is in on time, vehicle response is normal.
TVC bus voltage looks good, tank pressures look good.
Okay, MDS.
Pitch program was in on time, vehicle response was normal also. Very smooth flight, very, very small attitude disturbances.
Report a very smooth flight so far, no problems at all.
Scientists at Cape Canaveral, Florida, sent another unmanned Voyager spacecraft on its way to Jupiter and Saturn today. It lifted off flawlessly at 8:56 a.m. and had none of the problems of the Voyager launch 2 weeks ago. This Voyager presumably will get to Jupiter in March of 1979.
And in 1988, a crew of two cosmonauts returning from the Mir space station had a wee problem. After they jettisoned the service module of their Soyuz capsule, they were ordered to stay in orbit for a little over an extra day while engineers on the ground sorted out some technical glitches. Now, the problem is that the service module is where the crew's water supply is, and it's also where the restroom facilities are. Talk about putting a hold on the countdown. After Soyuz TM-5's return to Earth, crew and ground controllers exchanged a few notes, and the flight rules about when to eject the service module were changed. In 2016, the European Space Agency's Rosetta space probe's gradually decreasing orbit allowed it to see more fine detail on the surface of Comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko, now racing outward toward the orbit of Jupiter. This surface survey finally revealed the fate of Rosetta's Philae lander. As ESA engineers suspected in 2014, Philae came to rest on its side in a crevice, preventing its batteries from recharging via its solar panels. Originally aimed at the Agyokia region on the larger of Comet 67P's two lobes, Philae's harpoon anchoring system failed to fire, leaving the lander to bounce helplessly into a ravine on the smaller lobe of the comet in the Abydos region instead. It only relayed its surface findings to Rosetta for 3 days in late 2014. Rosetta would soon join Philae on the surface in just a few weeks when its own mission ended. Groundbreaking special effects makeup artist Stuart Freeborn was born on this day in 1914. He's best known for his work on the original Star Wars trilogy, for which he helped to create the look of the Jedi Master Yoda. He also worked on 2001: A Space Odyssey and the Superman movies of the 1970s and 80s. Cosmonaut Andrei Nikolaev was born in 1929. Legendary filmmaker Werner Herzog was born on this day in 1942. And while he hasn't directed a Star Wars movie, he still managed to sneak into the Star Wars universe with an unusual demand.
I would like to see the baby.
It is asleep.
We all will be quiet. Open the prem.
Freddie Mercury of Queen was born today in 1946. Actor Peter Wingfield, who played Mythos in the Highlander TV series, was born in 1962.
5,000 years.
Yeah, give or take. And that was when I took my first head. And before that, it all starts to blur.
I guess it would. Just didn't think you existed.
It's good to be a myth.
Yeah, no one hunts for a myth or a watcher.
What better place to hide? I'm in charge of finding myself, and I make sure it never happens.
Rose McGowan of Charmed fame was born in 1973, and Laura Bertram, who played Trance Gemini in Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, was born today in 1978.
So what's it like being a mercenary? It sounds like it'd be a really tough job. I guess it'd allow you to travel a lot, which is kind of nice, but it's not as if the locals will be happy to see you when you arrive, and I suppose that killing people is a very stressful way to make a living.
Would you shut up?
I'm sorry, am I distracting you? I don't mean to, it's just sometimes I find that a little casual conversation is...
Not another word.
In 2006, trapped under Cylon occupation on New Caprica, the survivors of the colonial fleet mounted the resistance.
Now they want us to do their dirty work for them. Are you kidding me? New Caprica police? What a bunch of crap.
Some people say it's a good thing. Give the Centurions off the streets, let us patrol them ourselves. Maybe Charlie would still be alive if they had human.
No matter how you try to swing this, you work for the Toasters, it's treason, that's it.
As Sci-Fi Channel premiered a series of short scenes during the build-up to the upcoming third season of Battlestar Galactica. You can read about these events and many more on TheLogbook.com's ever-evolving timeline of geek history. TheLogbook.com's podcast and video productions are entirely listener, viewer, and reader-supported, and there's more than just the escape pod. There's Retrogram, where you pick a week between 1970 and 1990 to reassess all of that week's sci-fi, horror, superhero, and fantasy shows. There's Select Game, Expanded Memories of the Odyssey 2, covering one of the great overlooked classic video game systems. There are the frequent Phosphor.Fossils YouTube videos, each one revisiting classic, arcade, computer, and home video games from the 70s through the 90s. And there are the Logbook.com's original books and ebooks, and much more. You can find ebooks and anything you might want from online vendors such as Amazon or eBay at thelogbook.com/store. There are original designs on everything from t-shirts to socks to shower curtains to non-medical grade face masks at thelogbook.redbubble.com. You can support The Logbook on an ongoing basis at patreon.com/thelogbook or at Ko-fi, that's ko-fi.com/thelogbook. You can also help us out by subscribing to CBS All Access or Amazon Prime through the ads you'll find on nearly any page of thelogbook.com. Thanks for listening to The Escape Pod.
Commencing escape pod landing procedure. The logbook of your escape pod was written and produced by Earl Kane.
Good morning. This is the Voyager Mission Control at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. I'm Alan Wood, and we have the good fortune this morning to have with us again Ron Draper, who is a mission analyst for the Voyager, and Voyager Engineering Design Chief. We're coming up now on the spacecraft should be aligning itself, the Centaur should be aligning itself for the separation of the spacecraft from the Centaur. The purpose of the alignment is what, Ron?
Simply to get us started in the right direction. And when we then get the separation events, the springs push us off, and we then are on our own, and we then stabilize again on that attitude that the Centaur set us up on. Then we take over, and shortly thereafter, we will ignite the 100-pound engines, 5-pound engines for control, then ignite the solid rocket, which really injects us on our own orbit out to Jupiter.
The next event will be the turning on of the command and computer subsystem clock, which is the master clock on the spacecraft that times all of the events for the whole mission.
As a matter of fact, that clock will actually, once it's started by the Centaur, will cause us to fire the separation event itself, and we then separate on our own right from the vehicle.
Following the turn on of the clock, We'll have a spacecraft separation probably in about a minute and a half.
That's right. Now, shown on the hard copy at this time is a photograph showing the spacecraft in its launch configuration. And the science boom and the RTG booms are both down next to the side of the spacecraft to give it strength and protect it as we then inject it in its orbit. Separation takes place at this location between an adapter that we built to go to the Centaur and the spacecraft itself. We now have spacecraft separation. Now, after the spacecraft separation, we then fire the solid rocket. And shown on the hard copy here again is what the propulsion system looks like. We have 100-pound engines that give us pitch and yaw control, 5-pound engines which give us roll control, and then we fire the solid rocket motor, which gives us the injection itself. All of this fuel for the liquid system, the 100-pound to 5-pound engine, comes out of a central tank that is located up interior, inside the mission module. And when we get ready to jettison the propulsion module, we separate at the location indicated here where this 4x4 strut arrangement combines with the propulsion module structure.
Okay, we have confirmation that the propulsion module has started, and we also have the burnout confirmation. Also during this time, the shutters of the star trackers and the sun sensors have been blown off. So, the propulsion module, which has 2,290 pounds of solid propellant in it, has burned completely in a very short time, and we'll soon know how well it went. The altitude of the spacecraft is now 736 miles. Its velocity is now 32,481 miles per hour. It is located in the western Pacific near Guam. It is now on a transfer orbit to the planet Jupiter. The next event that will come along very shortly here, the spacecraft should now be pitching over in preparation for the propulsion module separation from the spacecraft, from the mission module, I should say. Now, why is this
Well, we pitch the spacecraft down so that we get good communications with the Earth. And so when the low-gain antenna is located closer to the Earth, we can hear it better. And that way we can then see the separation of the deployment of the RTG boom and the science boom, and then the separation or jettison of the propulsion module itself. At this time, we are coasting with the, as the model indicates, with the RTG boom and the science boom both latched down to the side. We've finished using the solid rocket motor, and we are using the 5-pound rocket motors at this time for control. Now, we have pitched down at 2.88 degrees per second, about 114 degrees to point. The low-gain antenna, which is mounted on the upper side of the high-gain antenna, and operates at S-band. We can both command and receive over this. But at the present time, we only have downlink transmitting capability.
Okay, we have confirmation now that the science boom has deployed and the RTG boom has deployed. So now the spacecraft has begun its rather elaborate procedure of unfolding itself in space.
Of course, as you remember, Alan, the last time we did this, we had the RTG fully deployed and latched in position, but the science boom did not get an in-lock indication, and later we determined that it's very nearly in the right location, but the microswitch never did give us an in-lock indication. It may actually be fully locked in position. And on the photograph now, on the hard copy, we actually see all of the booms deployed. At this time, the PRA and PWS science instruments antennas and the magnetometer boom have not yet deployed. So presently we have the RTG boom starting starting deployment and the science boom starting deployment, and we will get an in-lock indication for each of those shortly.
The next event that should come along will be the SLU of the high-rate SLU of the scan platform, and that will be to do what, Ron?
That's to protect the science instruments. The way we had to latch the science scan platform was in such a way as that if we deployed it and then acquired the sun, the sensitive instruments would be pointed at the sun. So we rotate the scan platform around so that it looks at a science calibration target, gives it a place to hide as we do the sun acquire maneuver. This way, there is virtually no likelihood that a science instrument would see the sun, even if we had to go through 4 pi steradian, look for the sun, as we started to last time.
The scan platform, of course, is the portion of the science boom which contains the optical instruments, which have to be pointed at the planets, Jupiter and Saturn, and the satellites as they go by, and that is why it's mounted on the end of the boom and so it can be moved about.
That's correct, Alan.
Now, we should be now at a point where that process begins.
While we're waiting for those to take place, I'll show a photograph of what those science instruments look like out on the end of the science boom. And they are very large science instruments. We have something like 125 kilograms of science on board the spacecraft, of which most of it is located out here in the science boom. We have an IRIS, which stands for infrared radiometry and spectrometry, a photopolymetry instrument, the narrow-angle TV camera or imaging, wide-angle imaging, and we have an ultraviolet spectrometer over here next to the IRIS.
For the non-metric people, that's about 254 pounds of instruments out there.
That's right, Alan. We'll eventually get all of the system of the world converted here.
The next event after the SLU of the platform will be the propulsion module separation. And we are now launch plus 1 hour, 9 minutes, and 13 seconds, and the altitude of the spacecraft is now 2,732 miles, traveling at a speed of 29,953 miles per hour. It is going away from the Earth very rapidly. In fact, it passes the Moon. It will pass the Moon approximately 10 hours, I believe. Is that right?
It's about 8 hours. We're
actually
really moving
faster than that.
That's right.
A much faster trajectory than the Voyager 2, which was launched on August 20th.
Now, at this time, we started off with the spacecraft total weight, including the adapter, 4,589 pounds, and we left with the Centaur an adapter that weighed 104 pounds. That gave us a total of 4,485 pounds, which we separated from the Centaur. And then we burned the solid rocket motor, and we're left with 350 pounds that were in the propulsion module when we jettisoned it. At the time of jettison, then we are left with 1,820 pounds of mass, which we are ejecting on orbit all the way to Jupiter.
Very good. I think now we'll check out for a few minutes. This is Voyager Mission Control out.